Good afternoon. My name is Julie Fedorchak. I'm a member of the North Dakota Public Service Commission, and we are gathered on the 12th floor of the Capitol, 1:30 on February 3rd, for a work session on case number PU-20-379, which is MDU and Great Plains combined natural gas rate increase. This is something that is provided for in our rules, is that correct?
Policies.
For us to, us as commissioners, to talk with staff, advisory staff, about the case and maybe get some of their early impressions, key issues on the table as far as we see it, as far as staff sees it. And so I'm excited for this because it's the first time since I've been here that we've actually done this. So I think it's great. I don't have any other opening comments. I'll see if Randy does, and then I'll kick it over to you, Brian, as this is your portfolio.
I do not. Thank you.
All righty. You're up, Commissioner Crosius.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have any opening comments, so we'll dive right in. I could start asking questions, or did anyone from staff have something that they wanted to start with?
Sure, if I may. My understanding is, in the past, normally this operated as the commission, of course, had the opportunity of, as well as staff, to take a peek at what's been provided. And I guess we're not looking to fully, pre-litigate the case, really, and we won't flesh out everything, because that's really what the parties are there to do during the actual rate case in and of itself. But I know we've been looking through a lot of the consumer items, and we can bring a couple things to your attention. If there's anything that you feel that it was you really want them to delve into further, and I want to say them, it's the parties, ARP, advocacy staff, as well as the company, and this would be an opportunity for us to probably not have the answers to this, but really look into it and subsequently ensure that you guys have the information that you need when it comes to rate case time. So we're not asking for a number of late filed exhibits, and that all the information is readily available so that we can really dig into it at the hearing, at your request.
Okay. Well, you said you had a couple of items that you wanted to bring up.
Sure.
Yeah, why don't we start there, because it might fall into what I'm curious about as well. So.
Sure, absolutely. So advisor staff got together, Pat and Jerry and I, and we looked into a number of different issues. We all brought a couple things forward just for general discussion that we thought maybe you'd want to look into. And I think Pat put together a list of the items that he might be best to walk us through.
Well, I actually have a list of items that advocacy staff and the company are talking about, and will be talking about at the hearing. But then I have this other list that we came up with that are kind of in addition to that, that advisory staff came up with. And based on some consumer contact that we've had, we have one related.
Before you get into them, I don't know how broadly you categorize things when you say a list of things that advocacy and the company are working on. Are we talking a list of 4 items or 40 items, or like how long of a list?
I never counted them up. Let's see.
Just about.
Front and back.
Is that basically from the pre-filed testimony that you gathered those?
It is.
Okay.
Right. It is.
And then how long is the other list that you're going to do?
3 items.
Okay.
And I guess I have one more to add. I think
maybe one more
list, but we can chat about that afterwards. It just came to me.
Then one other quick question for you.
Okay.
The consumer groups or the consumer issues or contacts you've had, can you describe those at all? Or?
Sure.
That's what I was going to do next.
Perfect.
Right.
Thanks, Pat.
And one of the consumer items, most recent consumer item, I believe, had to do with something called HomeServe, which is in fact, I just got a mailing about HomeServe just the other day, and it's it's like an insurance policy for your inside equipment.
Yeah.
And HomeServe is supposedly like a below-the-line service, a non-regulated service. And so that's one of the issues that a consumer brought to us related to the way that it's presented to the consumer. And this particular complaint was that, you know, was why is MDU doing this when and it, because it appeared to that consumer that it was MDU that was doing it. It's the way it's presented to the consumers. And I don't know that we want to go into it any more than that, but...
Maybe I could just add a little bit to that, if you're okay, okay with that, Pat. So,
sure.
And this is just from actually looking through the bill serve that Pat had, that he was kind enough to share with me. I know there have been a number of complaints about this. It isn't just this. There's like a sole one. There have been multiple complaints coming in regarding and how this is being advertised. This isn't a look into necessarily whether this is overly right or wrong, but we do understand, based upon the responses the company's provided, there's some sort of partnership between the two. And I guess we thought maybe the commission would like to just get a better understanding of what type of partnership that is, how this is being done, and how this is being advertised. And we could ask, of course, advocacy staff as well as the company to provide a little bit of testimony on that. And that's kind of, I think, what we had discussed, wasn't it, Pat?
Right.
I like that idea.
I do, too.
And then another one was that we talked about amongst advisory staff was thinking back to the SSIP rider that was once proposed by the company and just visiting with, you know, throwing that out there. I don't know if the commissioners are still interested in the rider. I think, Jack, you were kind of on page with this, too. Is the commissioners still interested in that concept?
Creating a rider for the SIP in terms of how to allocate, using it as a mechanism to allocate cost?
Right. And in the last rate case, I remember there was the commission was generally, if I remember correctly, expressly opposed based upon advocacy's staunch opposition to this. But I believe it was specifically Commissioner Fedorchuk. I know you expressed a little bit of interest in the end, saying, well, I may want to look a little more into this. And so just to, if this is something that the commission would like to request that the company or advocacy staff entertain to a degree, we thought we would bring it up for the purposes of your interest or just to let it be for the time being.
So there is
I thought, oh, go ahead, Jerry.
Well, the alternative is to look into the test year and see how much investment they've made in the test year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were supposed to be significant. And so there might be an alternative with a rider to spread it out of the test year.
Oh, expand over more than one.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good question because it has been on my mind as I've looked at some of this stuff. And I haven't figured out, you know, kind of to Jerry's point, whether I haven't dug enough into this yet to know whether these are just costs that are, there's a whole bunch now, and then the system's going to be good for a while,
mm-hmm.
or if this is just the beginning of a lot of multi-year investments. So I think that the company bringing the information forward through a rate case certainly allows us to look at it more thoroughly, like advocacy staff had said back in the day
mm-hmm.
when they strongly opposed it. And I like that. I like what we're doing now.
Sure.
My concern back then was that there was, I didn't quite understand the urgency of whether this was more immediate, and I definitely didn't want to get in a situation where the company wasn't making the investments because that they needed for safety because we denied the SIP, the SSIP.
Sure.
So that's where I'm kind of still at on that in terms of their obligation and ability to make the investments needed to maintain safety both through this rate case and beyond.
Sure.
Versus that mechanism, which I get, you know, kind of provided a blank check.
Sure.
To some degree.
With return component on the interim.
Yeah.
So it does do that.
I thought the SIP, that was one of my questions, because when you, in particular, read the testimony from James Heidel, it's a little different. It's the same topic, but it's a little different than what we're talking about right now. But I did note that it seemed that he was having a hard time figuring out how much is due to customer growth, how much is safety, and his testimony seemed to indicate that he thought it was more than the company should be getting. He made a significant deduction on that, but I recall telling, not embedding it in the rates the last time, but being open to MDU pursuing replacement of pipe that wasn't as safe as it should be.
Right.
And that's a dicey thing when you say, because there's some of that every year, right? I mean, what any large network has repairs and replacements. So what's the extra amount above and beyond what you would normally expect, knowing it's not perfectly even from year to year to year to year, and saying, well, this is what we normally do, in terms of just normal system replacement, upkeep, et cetera. But we've got to go above that amount to address issues out in the field. So there are issues with the distribution system. And there was 7 or 8 towns in particular, I think, were listed out in the western part of the state, Glen Ullin and some others.
New Salem was one of the original.
New Salem, yeah.
Topic first came up, as I recall. But
sure.
I kind of agree with Brian and Heidel's response. Doesn't it talk quite a bit about the allocation of safety-related investments? And that,
sure.
So isn't that on the first list of
yes.
things that are probably going to be covered anyway? And not only that, allocation, but then just the significance of it, that most of the investment wasn't necessarily, as I recall, to serve new customers, but the safety-related investments. And I don't know either, where's the line? I mean, if you're just going to get ROE on anything just by naming it safety equipment, I suppose you can just about replace everything every year. And yet, you don't want to be denying legitimate safety upgrades.
Sure.
So I don't know where that line is. And
do you think we gave the company the impression that, though, I almost wonder if the company wasn't under the impression that we were receptive to these system replacements that would be above and beyond the line in terms of saying, well, it's not in the rate case, but we want to keep talking about it, is I think where it ended.
I think these type of replacements are always part of a rate case.
Right.
So it's, I don't know if I mean, from staff's perspective, I don't know if you feel differently, Jerry or Pat, but I guess we always just kind of looked at this carte blanche as this filed. I guess I couldn't speak really to the impression that the company might have received from it.
Well, if it's not part of the rate case, then we need a rider. Things have to either be denied or approved somehow. If they're making, let's say, legitimate investments, and we don't deal with it in rate cases, I guess in the absence of a rider, it seems to me we have to deal with it in rate cases.
Yes.
Could we? I'm sorry.
Are you going on to something else?
No, I'm on this still.
Okay, I have a follow up for Jerry Leon, but go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Is it possible, prior to the SIP program being proposed, introduced, to look at the preceding 10 years and calculating what the average expenditure was for system replacement, to say, okay, this seems like a reasonable baseline over a 10-year period, therefore in year 11, well, you know, factoring in inflation, you know, the cost of materials going up over that period, having some type of an inflationary adjustment, which I think would make sense and be fair. But then above and beyond that, that would be where the rider mechanism would come in.
Do we have to go down the path of a rider mechanism? I mean, I'm not saying...
We don't have to.
I'm not saying I really even am sure.
No.
We need to open that door going into this. I think it's a conversation that's maybe worth having as we review this, you know, and in the hearing. I'm hoping we'll get a better sense for what's coming down the road after this.
Sure. Well, and maybe we can... I guess to answer that question, the rider mechanism, I think, isn't necessary. It is just an additional recovery mechanism, interim between rate cases for such things. But maybe what would be helpful is to maybe some sort of exhibit provided by the parties and into, I guess, the future plans regarding replacement costs. Might be something you want to see. I didn't remember, Pat. Did you see an extensive amount within the provided testimony you're filing?
Well, there was their forecast test year,
right?
And they have, you know, they have forecasts of what they're going to be doing in the next year. Mm-hmm. I don't think I saw anything beyond that.
Right. We can go backwards and forwards if you'd like as well.
Okay. Well, there are a couple of ways to look at it. If we had a baseline.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's a consideration for what the base rate's going to be. But then above and beyond that, let's say there are 10 communities, 12 communities out there that have the old lead pipe or...
There's none of that left, is there?
The pipe that's causing
old,
problems.
Old steel and old plastic.
Steel, okay. Old steel, old plastic. Oh, that's right, the bad batch of plastic, which is an unusual expense item that's not going to continue on forever. I wouldn't want to embed that additional cost into base rates because that becomes a long-term expense to consumers that, you know, you might have this, you know, peak and valley over a 5, 7, 8 year period or 3, 4, 5 year period. Then I think it's beneficial to consider at least a rider mechanism for the above and beyond to get this taken care of, and then we can be very specific in terms of knowing what's driving the above and beyond amount, and then that rider, in theory, would go away versus embedding that bubble in time into base rates where it doesn't necessarily go away, or maybe it doesn't. You could adjust in the next rate case. How often do base rates go down? Anyway, just food for thought.
Sure.
Would they be, So, Jerry, what did you mean about spreading over the test year over multiple years?
You could come up with some kind of a mechanism to, instead of having the base rates, have them put actual costs into a rider, and that would expire as soon as they spent it.
I see.
So you're setting the value in the rider in that as a cap, you're saying, almost subject to limitation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or taking like the cost of certain investments and saying we're going to pay for these over 5 years in this rider in this way.
Well, not exactly. You would spend their actuals.
Actuals each year. I see.
Yeah. Jerry, what would be the benefit of doing that rather than just actually baking it in rates in the first place? I mean, for visibility purpose or?
No.
Because you looking forward, you could project that.
Making sure that they only get actual recoveries.
Okay.
I think it's similar to what Commissioner Krosius was thinking about riders and the benefit of the rider versus plugging it into base rates that, you know, really the company decides when it wants to come back in for a rate case. Mm-hmm. Staff can suggest a rate case if they want to, but at our expense. But otherwise, the company decides.
When we set the rates now, what they've actually spent up to this point would be included in those rates.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very similar to what they were proposing, though, isn't it, with the SSIP? That they would come back after they had a year of construction and say, here's what we did, and here's what our costs are, and so let us recover these. I thought that's what the end, what we didn't like about it was that we wouldn't have any filing fee or whatever to try to question the costs at or time. Both.
Yes, I think that was the argument, if I recall, was there'd likely be less scrutiny on an interim basis as opposed to a rate case and allowing the rate increase, on one issue item outside of the broader valuation.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, well, things to keep in mind as we go through this.
And we don't have to decide all these things too. So if you guys have some thoughts as we move forward that you'd like to explore a little bit, just feel free to reach out.
Perfect.
Yeah.
How long is your list, Pat?
Just one more. That that are these things that are additional to, in addition to what the company and the advocacy are working on. But this was also a result, I think, of some situations we've had, some consumer complaints that we've had, and it has to do with the cost sharing for line extensions.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought that we would like to delve more into it a bit deeper so that we could determine whether the formula that they are using reflects the actual cost that the company has related to extensions.
And we actually did have a tariff revision that we looked into that formula. I can't remember what it was, 4 or 5 years ago. But we approved
it.
There is a formula in a tariff, but that's what we want to look at a little bit deeper.
And it's just unclear whether they're following it. Is that the question? Or what is the question here? It seems like once we have a tariff, that should be clarity.
There's an issue in that advocacy staff brings up that has to do with whether they're following it or not.
Uh-huh. Applying it consistently in all of the examples cases of line extension.
There is a concern.
Yeah.
And I think one of the items that advocacy staff, and correct me if I'm wrong, Pat, my recollection is one of the items is they say that right now it's they may essentially do this line extension or have this type of cost added to it. And I think advocacy staff requested it to be changed to a shall. So essentially holding the company to that line extension policy.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. That was one of the concerns. Right. That was kind of like a resolution, I guess. But
and as
so, just you said there is a formula in place for the line extension.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a question of whether or not it's being followed. Did I hear you correctly?
In part, and then the other part would be whether the formula still applies today, in current day
it's
versus
the correct formula.
However old it is.
And this formula ties back to the consumer's responsibility versus the developer's responsibility?
You know, that
more with company responsibility versus developer responsibility.
Or it can be the customer, the person's buying the house, do they have to pay for it? Or does the developer have to pay for it?
Right, right.
I think most of the complaints we've been receiving are generally oriented towards developers.
Yeah.
Specifically towards new areas. Mm-hmm. But we were thinking, and we discussed that the other day, that one thing that might be useful is staff's impression into how, in practice, this is being applied and to provide some testimony towards that. And
yeah, I
that
would
from
like
staff.
That.
I would, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I guess now we're in checking on your lists. On the commissioner's list?
The commissioner's list. One additional item, and this isn't an issue, but usually, just to bring up, and maybe we can make this clear as we're going forward, usually my recollection is most of the hearings we'd like to see an exhibit related to customer impacts, and a lot sometimes is received, frequently with settlements, for example. But it would be nice if, for example, if there wasn't a settlement, if there's a settlement, we should expect a spreadsheet of how this is probably going to impact every individual or impact the customers by customer class. If it is not, it would be nice if instead of trying to go through the testimony and figure it out, that if advocacy staff as well as the company would provide their version of with their disallowances and with their request, how that would ultimately impact each customer class as well prior to the hearing. I was wondering if that would be helpful to the commission.
Mm-hmm. And that would include Wahpeton, because Wahpeton's getting rolled in here, and so what's going to be the effect on the customers that are getting moved to the MDU rates?
Yep.
Well,
and that seems huge, the customer impacts of it.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know what they...
That information is in the application.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I've actually gone and pulled it, you know, just in my review, I've kind of pulled it out so that I'd have something.
Right.
And I shared that with the commissioners in a memo that I sent out a while back. But you're never absolutely sure you got it right unless the company provides it.
Right. So we'll have that, and it'd be good to have that from the company. But I was also thinking from advocacy staff side, from what they're...
So you can compare.
Right. So there'd be a comparison for commissioners' reference.
Brian, do you have any issues to bring forward yourself?
The big one for me was tied to the SIP. And just trying to... It almost felt to me when I was reading, again, going back to the testimony from James Heidel, that maybe he wasn't fully aware of how we had addressed the SIP with the company in the prior rate case. It seemed, or did he? I guess that's a question. Do you think he had the background information necessary to make the recommendations that he did? I guess just that's the simplest way I can put it.
I guess from usually with consultants, when they're preparing for a rate case, they'll go back and look through the last couple that the companies have filed. So I'm assuming this would be part of their or they were at least knowledgeable about it as they went forward their evaluation. And as well as advocacy staff, I know this was a hot issue for advocacy staff in that case. I'm assuming that they would probably have been advising them on that as well.
Yeah, the reason I ask, and now I'm trying to find it on my notes, he was questioning customer growth versus system safety requirements and the replacement of the old steel and plastic pipe, which, you know, if I were in the company's shoes, I would have viewed the commission's response in the last rate case as receptive to continuing to explore that. And obviously it's a lingering issue. Commissioner Christman brought it up, and I agree. I think it was Commissioner Christman. We also don't want pipe that isn't safe to be in the ground anymore either. And to have, you know, to have a replacement plan that doesn't drag out over the course of time if that's been compromised because it's deteriorated faster underground because that bad batch of, I think, plastic pipe in particular. You know, I don't want to just, well, we've got to come up with a plan on how we address that. So But that I think my questions related to SIP were, we talked about it before, and that was the big one for me. The other was just the 7.8% request versus the 4.47% rate.
From
James Heidel.
Gotcha.
I think it was, well, he kind of blended his, it was mostly his, but he also referenced the other, two other individuals as he was going through this. But for all intents and purposes, that's quite a difference.
Sure.
No, I didn't see a lot of difference between safety and whatever else he was talking about in there. Because, well, at least for residential customers, they're all getting the same rate per customer. And so whether or not it's going for safety or other things isn't going to make any difference in the allocation, I don't think. Maybe I'm missing something here.
Well, I think that'll be an argument that Heidel will be discussing with the commissioners when on the stand.
That's true.
Because he does get into allocation factors and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. Volumetric charge for some of the stuff. The one issue that is sort of beyond maybe all the specifics that the company has laid out, maybe, well, for sure the advocacy, and is the technology and how it's changing in the gas and gas industry in general, and how do we know that what they're doing and what they're proposing is like the best solutions, or that, you know, the using the most cutting edge stuff or the most innovative, or, you know, I'd like from the company probably some more explanation or information on that sort of thing, just getting to, are we using the latest and greatest new components, the parts, the pipe made, the materials that the pipe is made out of, and that sort of stuff that's both cost effective and safest long term. And then what's the next phase of this? You know, we're looking at a pretty substantial rebuilding of the entire system here over the course of however long, replacements. You know, are we going to need that in 15 years? Are we going to need it in, you know, what's the outlook? Mm-hmm. What's the general outlook that they see going down the road, 15, 20 years, 30 years?
Is this specifically related to the replacements or even in a broader scale?
The replacements, but then also how that fits into kind of the system as a whole.
Okay. And this is something probably you would just like some information from the
community. Yeah. Okay. Yep. Just to have the kind of the longer term view, not like an integrated resource plan,
sure,
type thing, not that extensive, but just like what's the long end game or 20 to 30 year,
sure,
view in how this stuff fits into that.
Okay. Maybe how they're balancing the maybe short-term benefits versus,
yep,
the long-term possible. Okay.
Exactly.
Or even the technology that they're using in their replacements,
mm-hmm,
and how that will last,
right,
into the future. How, if it's the best thing to be putting in now for long-term,
mm-hmm,
future benefit.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also depending on the level of a safety issue, and if it seems like there should be coordination with cities, that if it,
sure.
By my house, we spent mm-hmm. all last summer with Divide Avenue torn up, you know, throughout most of the summer. Now, I don't know how our pipe is out there. I'm just using it as an example. But if that was something that was replaced the last couple of years, well, could it have waited till this year and been done in coordination with a big street project? And it just seems like sometimes some of these things, the utilities and the cities need to coordinate.
You want
that is for sure.
How much that's done.
Would you like to hear like their what how they do mm-hmm. that?
Yeah.
How they plan for that?
Yep. Yeah, that's a great how they're working annually or you know with the city's plans and how that might they can dovetail into plans to dig up the infrastructure to do what they need done at the same time. So we saw that at we've seen that in Excel and Fargo where there's been a lot of yeah. wasted opportunities.
And sometimes they don't, you know, something goes wrong with the sewer or something, sure. so the street gets there. But like in my case there, it's been known for several years that this was coming up. Mm-hmm. And so if something needed to be done, it was a great opportunity.
Yeah. And then do they feel that they have the flexibility with us? Like how does that, I would hate for them to say, well, you know, we didn't have the approval of the commission to do that, so we didn't.
Yeah.
That. And so what kind of mechanism do we need to have in place to trigger those kind of conversations so we can take advantage of that sort of stuff?
Well, I'd like to hear from them first because I find it hard to believe that they're not coordinating to some extent, but we'll find out. They can make their case and say, here's what we currently do. But the other part, just from one curiosity I have, how reliable are city plans like that? Are they highly reliable or are they somewhat reliable and now you've planned on it and you're sitting on materials maybe specific? I mean, you'd think it would be generally the same, but okay, we're going to mm-hmm. bring people here and we're going to line up contractors to be in Minot to do our work and then all of a sudden, well, it's delayed. Not that cities are ever late or don't keep schedule. I don't think so. But I'd like to hear from the company saying, no, actually, it's pretty reliable. Or, you know, we've tried and it's created problems, logistical challenges, and here's why. I don't know enough. I mean, all the questions I think we all have. But, yeah, I'd like to see a high level of coordination, too, make no mistake about it.
Sure.
If it's feasible.
Back to the investment piece in the long term, are they upgrading meters? Is that part of this rate case?
There's not a specific
okay.
program.
Mm-hmm. So that's another thing I'm curious about. With what's the, how are meters changing with gas? And are there yeah. meters that are on the market or coming down the pipe that have more?
Play on words, perhaps.
Good job catching it. That have a capacity for improving efficiency,
sure.
you know, and helping our customer, greater customer engagement so they can help sure. reduce their usage, that sort of thing.
Oh.
That maybe
Smart meters.
That
yeah,
kind of falls
gas.
Under, that kind of falls under the technology
yeah,
questions you
right.
have for the system.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's one issue in there related to meter readings
mm-hmm.
right.
by foot.
I think there's some meter thing, but
yes,
yeah.
some discussion about that, but I think we can ask them to provide some more information on
yeah.
their
mm-hmm.
meter technology.
As long as we're on it, just a quick, I happen to be on that page. They're proposing a new fee for manual meter reading, a charge of $26.05 per month, which would tell me that there aren't a lot of them out there.
Yeah. Yeah, there are not a lot of customers that this would impact. I just think you were saying more about
that
they were still
about.
Reading meters by foot, but I don't, they're out there walking the streets, but they're not doing that.
You know,
it's this thing.
To.
And if we're going to have our rate structure that we just got in place, I don't see where we need any residential meters.
Oh.
Can you say it again,
yeah,
Jerry?
I have to do volume.
I'm sorry.
I have to
if we're gonna have our flat per customer charge instead of a volumetric charge, then we probably don't need any kind of meters for the residential customers.
I don't think they applied to have solely a flat non-volumetric charge.
I thought that's what we had for them.
You still have to know how much to charge them for cost of gas.
Still have the gas use.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yep, mm-hmm. You're right. Yeah.
What about the AARP's filings? Do you feel comfortable that we have what we need from them in terms of their issues?
Their issues are similar to the last few cases. And to the degree it's the case that they present, I don't know what else we would ask for them outside of what they provide on that. Mostly relates to COVID and how we shouldn't be, of course, increasing rates due to the impacts and the extraordinary circumstances on residents. And the other part is the redesign class cost of service that we've been seeing in the past. Same typical statement.
Should have done it on some of those other years when everybody wanted us to raise the rates.
Darn, lost that chance. When was that again?
We're asleep at the wheel on that.
I missed that request that came in.
I want to, this is probably obvious, but I just want to make sure we're tying in something that Jerry had said and something that Jack had said earlier. The issue with Wahpeton and Great Plains, and then the customer impact evidence we're going to be asking for. I hope that's not just like lumped together, because that is something I worry about. I want to see, hopefully, that ultimately we can get to a point where Great Plains is just worked in and is part of the company. Mm-hmm. But rate shock definitely is a deal here. And
sure.
From what I've reviewed of this case, depending on how we do this, it could be pretty significant for some classes and some people down there. And so I just want to make sure that we don't miss something and do something that's more dramatic than maybe what we would have intended with that Great Plains area.
If I guess we put that terminology, would that be whether that is being addressed with the appropriate level of gradualism that...
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, one thing there is that they be doing away with the declining block rate in Wahpeton. And you worry about heating customers that are getting a reduced rate for their higher volumes not getting that reduction anymore, that you'd think that somebody might get nailed there.
Which makes me think about when you want to see the impact to customers, do you want to see the impact at different levels of usage for like a residential customer?
Sure.
Maybe, like a lot of maybe times a couple. I mean, we can't have like dozens of them. And charts get so long that you lose track, but maybe a couple examples of different levels.
Well, I think the nice thing of where we currently are is they still have to provide rebuttal at this point. I think that's where they are on the procedural schedule. And so make this request, I think they can address it, provide, you know, an example and give us an explanation along with it as well.
When we talk about average residential, or I suppose average for some other classes too, but mm-hmm. I don't even remember now what they consider the average residential usage. I know I'm thinking of electricity now, but I don't know which company. Isn't MDU Electric 892 or something like that? Is whatever they use to figure average usage, does it still pertain to today? Or Have we kept it consistent for so long that more energy efficient furnaces have caused it to be way wrong, or larger houses mm-hmm. have caused it to be way wrong the other way? Mm-hmm. I don't know, but is what we consider average still at all close to average?
Well, you can calculate the average based on the information they've provided in the application. Okay. You know, you can look at what their sales forecast is versus the number of customers. So you can get a sales per year and then average per month.
Yeah.
Okay. I think one final question I just generally have, and this is just more of an administrative, how you guys are hoping this case proceeds. So frequently we get settlement on certain issues, all issues, but there have been times, and granted not recently, but in my being with the commission, that sometimes I've heard commissioners express, you know, sometimes I just wish we had this case fully litigated all the way out so we can see everything in front of us. We get to really see all the issues and flesh them out and not see them all wrapped up in a tight box like that. Is a settlement on a lot of the issues something you'd be agreeable to entertaining, or is that something that you'd actually prefer not to see at all?
Well, from my perspective, because there was, this is already kind of the, we put off the real serious discussion on the infrastructure needs, safety versus, you know, service, all these significant investments they're making. We talked about them some last time, but it wasn't as perhaps in depth as we needed to make to go ahead and give them the recovery they were seeking at the time.
Sure.
And so now we're seeing that. So I feel like we need to talk about that mm-hmm. and sit down and hear what they're seeing, what their justification is, and how that fits into the bigger picture versus having all that kind of happen between the parties and then us staying here, you know, and having no real context with which to sort out a settlement agreement.
Sure. And I think a lot of times they could provide that along with a settlement agreement if they
want. But it's not the same as cross-examining people.
That's true.
It's not really even close.
That's true.
So.
For my part, I would entertain a settlement agreement, but mm-hmm. if other commissioners want to go through the case, I don't object to that either. But I don't want to wrap up. I have one more issue I want to bring up, too, but
sure.
Finish this.
You're wondering what I'm thinking, right?
No, I was just trying to get general impressions. That's all.
I would entertain a settlement if some of the issues we have raised were addressed
mm-hmm.
within the settlement as well, to the point where I felt satisfied.
Sure.
Knowing that as soon as you have a rate case, even before it concludes, because it's based on the past. And it's forward-looking, but it's based on past information. It's already changing. You know, it's slowly changes every day. So I don't know if they'll be able to put something or something to be able to, you know, be put together that would make a settlement clear enough. But
yeah. Well, I guess to the what
but
I'm
I'd entertain it, sure.
So to the extent that they provide a settlement with enough clarity of if and how this came about, they would be, you guys would be open to seeing one?
I'd rather not, but.
Okay.
It doesn't seem likely, though, from a practical standpoint, that can arrive at that place, but who knows?
It's true.
Yeah.
There's just too many things out there, it seems like.
And usually when we've had a settlement, we've had a hearing on the settlement, so you get a chance to
right.
hear how it got to
that's true.
Be.
To a degree. It depends on how tightly wrapped up it is and what issues are presented. I mean, if there are some issues that specifically you could say that, you know, we really just like to see this issue specifically litigated so we can do the evaluation. I mean, there is a benefit, I think, administratively a lot of times to having settlement on a lot of the issues. That way you're not... of everyone's in agreement, why fully argue everything.
Yeah, you know, like maybe the pension issue I would entertain them working out.
Okay.
I know, Commissioner Crispin, you said you have one more thing. I have one more thing then after Commissioner Crispin.
So do you have clarity on whether staff should entertain a settlement, or do you want to just go to a case?
Well, I said I'd entertain on the pension. I'd have to look more specifically on some of the other issues, but I think that was one that kind of jumps out as perhaps being.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe on the return on equity, too. Yeah. That's something that in settlements can, you know, I think the parties do a nice job with that generally, mm-hmm. working that out. It seems like they split the difference a lot of times. So,
I hope they don't feel pressured to do that, though, because sometimes I worry somebody's starting pretty high without anticipation.
Right. Yeah. I'm just saying, I don't mind going through every single issue in the formal process here.
Sure.
But if there's desire to try to reach a settlement on some of these,
if we were,
I wouldn't be opposed to that. But I really want to be able to talk through the actual capital expenditures and what's mm-hmm. being proposed there.
Sure.
If there were to be a settlement, couldn't we in the notice, because we would have a hearing on the settlement, but we could have a notice on the hearing, notice for the hearing on the settlement, and maybe in there specify certain issues that we want to absolutely address at the hearing. I mean, we haven't done anything like that before, but...
Well, I mean, any issue we would have would be enclosed within those issues.
Yes.
So all we'd have to do is to explain that to the company that would be...
Well, just to get Commissioner Fedorchuk's concern.
Okay.
Somehow. Being able to talk about those things in more detail than you might otherwise when there's a settlement that's been proposed.
Sure. Not to hop in, but I think there were two things that maybe at least one thing that's worth discussing that I think we might have forgot about. Patty, remember in our discussion we discussed the COVID impacts?
Yes.
And I'm not sure if you wrote that down on your list, but...
You're right, I didn't.
Maybe you can walk through that as something we should...
Okay, so one of the things the company says is that there are no impacts. They have included no impacts related to COVID. I remember reading that somewhere. I don't know if it was Covista's testimony, but I got to thinking about, you know, their sales, they're projecting sales volumes, and then I was wondering if they projected it based on the most recent historical year, maybe they're projecting sales volumes during this time of COVID. Based on this time of COVID, and we don't know if that is the case, and if it is the case, what were those impacts? How did COVID affect their forecasted sales for the test year?
Yeah, good question.
So whether it was included and how it impacted the test year?
Yeah.
So, a couple years ago, I don't remember exactly what the result was with MDU gas, but basically all of our utilities, we took action based on the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, and they either had their rates lowered or it offset delayed a rate case or various things, but they weren't allowed to keep that. And I find it hard to imagine we're going to get through even this year, and even more doubtful of the next 2 years, without those tax rates going back up as high or higher than they were before. So if we approve this, is Is it just our anticipation that they're going to come in and file for a new case somehow to adjust for that if and when it happens? Or is there something in the tariffs that build in that if there's a significant federal tax increase, it is approved? Or how do we handle that? Because especially if it happens on the quicker end, I hate to get done with this, in the coming months, and then we kind of did that without really going into full-blown rate cases, but I don't know if they have that option of getting recovery for that without a full-blown rate case. And if it's raised, I don't know if they want to pay it for multiple years till the next rate case.
So if you remember what happened with the Tax Cuts and Job Act, actually 1986 as well as this one, I think a deferred accounting was implemented, which they created a regulatory liability. It'd actually just be if I'm understanding this correctly, probably what happened is they'd make a filing, similar to what advocacy staff at that time did, requesting regulatory accounting to allow for possible recovery. And I think that'd probably be a regulatory asset in that case. They would have the
same thing, only they'd initiate it, right? Versus advocacy staff.
Right. So in that case, they would request that the commission grant that accounting treatment for recovery in the future after our evaluation. Or if you remember what happened with the Tax Cuts and Job Act, the regulatory liability was created for that period of time, and subsequently settlements were reached in how to address that issue. And so I imagine in that event, commission would likely be in a position to be able to do that again. The ones that were currently in a rate case that ultimately got wrapped in and resolved, the ones that were outside of rate case, accounting was created and it was subsequently settled.
But they wouldn't want to do regulatory accounting for, multiple years until the next rate case gets done, if it happens right after they just finish a rate case, would they?
Well, that would be up to their prerogative when they would want to file that rate case. If there would not be a settlement reached that would be just and reasonable to what the commission would like, that would be their alternative option, just like it was the same for advocacy staff.
But then if they chose to and we chose to approve it, we could do it just a settlement on that one issue. And
yes, that's what we did in the Tax Cuts and Job Act.
Okay, so then it's probably not right. Such a big deal.
Generally not preferred to take a single issue and have a decision on that, but to the impacts that type of thing happens, it seems like something commission has entertained multiple times.
And we kind of set a precedent in a way.
In fact, even on the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, we didn't have single issues necessarily, because they had things that they would like us wanted us to consider as uses for the reduced taxes, and
depend on the different utilities, we ended up with a different result in that one.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So, Brian, you had one more thing after.
I do, although I'm shocked that you would believe taxes could possibly go up. So, it was good while it lasted, right? So we'll see what happens. Minot. The Minot issue, and I don't believe if that... And the Minot issue are the stub lines that exist in the city of Minot. That it's a system that MDU purchased, an existing system. You have lines that run from the main to the house, to the meter. There's another stub line, and whether there's one more out there or if there are 5,000 out there, I don't know. But there's no record of them. They have no tracing wire on them. They're not used. They're stubbed off. How far do you from the?
I'm sure it's various lengths.
Yeah.
It would be the line from the main
right
to the home that they replaced, but then they stubbed off the one that was there.
Yeah.
And those stubs are underground, buried, and they can't find them. And so when somebody comes through to excavate,
there was one
them.
Right. There was one that we it's a case 2-3 years old. I don't want to mix case discussions here, but we were talking about the SIP. We were talking about. Mm-hmm. I would like to know. I don't recall seeing that in the SIP plan that was presented, anything that referenced Minot, unless I don't recall correctly, but I don't believe it was in. It could be a real, it's a safety issue right now. It's you know, you've got call before you dig, and Minot, you know, with the stub lines, it's called until you hit.
But what could you do about it? Go dig up everybody's yards to see if there's anything under there?
Well, the one part, and actually ties back into working with Pat and I talked about, and it ties back to when streets are replaced, and that might be the most feasible plan. But at the same time, if a street's not going to be replaced for 20 years, you're going to get more information on that. But I think it weaves into the SIP as well. And see what they come up with, whether or not we want to consider that as an element of the SIP discussion or if that's a standalone. But yeah, it's
even without the SIP, whether how that's ingrained into the safety system safety requirements as they do replacements, is that
okay? Whether it's a part of their distribution integrity management plan. I see those as two different things. I see the distribution integrity management plan determines whether there are it prioritizes facilities that need to be replaced.
Mm-hmm.
The SIP was just a rider to recover the expenses associated
safety
with that.
Integrity. Yeah.
But it's about the distribution integrity management plan,
mm-hmm.
and whether
the DIMP,
yeah, whether Minot, how they've factored Minot into that plan.
Yeah, it's a question worth asking because we're on the topic. It's still in the same arena in my opinion, and you always want to be careful. I don't want people in Minot to think, oh my goodness, we've got a really unsafe system here. But you know, it's another discussion that I'll make some more points when mm-hmm. when an order that's applicable to it. I think is not that far off. I think so.
So, is there something you'd like us to request relating that, or should this just be something we can anticipate that you would bring up?
No, I would ask. I'd like to have you ask the company. Does that make sense to weave that in to the discussion since we're on the same topic? In effect, one's old, aging infrastructure that needs to be replaced sooner than it would have otherwise. You know, it's aged out faster than it should have. Correct the bad poly pipe, and
I don't know what they have there.
Right, or the bad plastic pipe, I should say, and steel. But Minot's different. Maybe, but it's an old system. They bought it in the 60s, I want to say.
Yeah.
Or it was put in the 60s. Or was it?
I think it was in that time frame.
I mean, it's a 60, 70-year-old system to begin with. And anyway, I think just worth bringing up, and if it's like, no, it's better to look at that as a separate standalone because it's very unique.
Sure.
All right. Anything else?
No.
Do you want me to run through the list?
Sure, that'd be great, Jack.
Okay.
Summarize it.
The home serve issue as it relates to customers, the relationship and how it's essentially being functionally administered. The cost sharing for line extensions, how the current cost sharing is being applied, and whether that's just a reasonable approach to the line extension policy. How they're coordinating cities and subdivisions regarding future plans and future planning. Technology used for replacements as well as the system as a whole. The long-term and short-term benefits as well as current technology being used for meters and metering. The Wahpeton fold in with the rest of the Great Plains within to the existing rates and how whether it's being done with an appropriate level of gradualism. That was part of the discussion, the declining block rates and the different levels of for various users. Whether COVID was included and how it was implemented within the test year, and the last one is within the acquired Minot system, the non-locatable stubs and how that is being referenced within their current planning. Did I miss any, Pat?
Good.
Sounds good. Well, I'll make sure I write up an email to the parties, let them know that these are just general thoughts of concerns that you would like to possibly see addressed. And if there's anything else, of course, reach out to advisory staff.
Sounds great. All right, everybody. I think we are done. Thanks for your engagement.